The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia, and welcome once again to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley in the studio with Ada Nestor. Good afternoon, Ada.
Hello. Glad to be in studio again this week.
Yeah, glad to have you back. Although, you know, last week was great.
It was
a great discussion, and it was nice to have Mina in with us. But today's going to be a pretty interesting day. So, you know, here we are. We're 10 days out from the election.
Boring. And not much has happened this week.
It's incredible. Things are just rolling out by the hour. It's an endless string of drama, and you know, the reactions from let's call them America's enemies are fascinating. So today we're going to be joined at 12:30 by Ezra Cohen, the former Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. He's been with us before. Ezra's a great guest. This is going to be a fun conversation. At 1 o'clock, we have Mark Mitchell back from Rasmussen Reports.
Yep.
So that's going to be interesting. We'll hear a little bit more about maybe even, you know, some of the things that Rasmussen saw coming into this in their polling and you know, how things played out, but also what he sees going forward, because Mark is very much in tune with the attitudes in the country, being that he's constantly testing it. And then at 1:30, we're going to have Darren Gobb back, which is always a gift. Darren is, as you know, a foreign affairs sort of geopolitical expert, and we'll be going through some of what this means around that. And he's also the chairman of a county Republican committee, so we may have a bit of a political element in that discussion. One thing to note, our next Keystone Town Hall is on Thursday, November 21. Anybody that wants to find out more about that, you can go to keystonetownhall.com, and you'll find under events a flyer there that tells you when and where. But this should be interesting. I think, you know, we're going to be gathering on Thursday to talk about what we've seen in this election, what worked and what didn't, what people think really drove opinions. And then more importantly, I think, or equally importantly, what's going to come next? You know, how do people see this unfolding, and where do we go from here? These are always great conversations because the audience, you know, is so informed, and the conversation's very engaged. So we're anxious to see what people think is going to happen as the America First agenda starts getting rolled out and the globalists and the leftists ramp up this response.
And the rhinos.
Well, let's not forget the old establishment, right? The old establishment, you know, never been fans of Donald Trump. I think they were kind of forced to support him this time. There really wasn't anywhere for them to hide.
Yeah.
And
they tried. I mean, they definitely tried to make DeSantis and Haley happen.
Oh, they did. They really wanted Haley. She would have been perfect because, you know, that loves a good war, you know, got a lot of money out of defense contracts. She was their perfect candidate. But, you know, they, in the end, I think they were just left without choices, because once Donald Trump created Trump Force 47 and began to use the party's mechanisms to drive that, it left this old establishment crowd, this sort of, you know, anti-American crowd, nowhere to hide. Republican opportunists and what I used to call the Republicrats.
Yeah.
I called them that cuz they were indistinguishable in terms of their policy positions from Democrats. They were just opportunists in a different party.
Right.
And now, if you want to join this conversation, you can do so by dialing in. Our phone number is 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. If you give us a call, we'll try to get you on. What a week it's been. The March of the appointments.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I'm working on a calendar.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Of all of the...
all the picks.
Oh, that's great.
Trying to assign months to each of them. I mean, really, we have a Gen X millennial cabinet.
Well, that's true. Although it's led by a guy that's 78 years old.
I know, but let's think about...
This is a multi-generational attack.
Yeah, but think about what he's doing versus what we normally see. We see older people picked. We don't see a future generation rising under a new administration. We see the old guard getting their positions and being put in their spots. He's bringing up the younger generation. He is giving you know, a headline to the next group of leaders who are going to lead our country. He is so confident and strong in his own skin that he is not threatened by having this intelligence and youth around him. It's incredible.
No. But if you listen
and
to
women, the women.
Mm-hmm. If you listen to his employees in 2015, start talking about him in 2016, start explaining the stories. If you heard any of the people, and these stories were all squelched by the media, but if you heard the stories of the people who he's helped through his life,
yeah,
there was an element of the way he interacts with people that just wasn't known by, I guess people knew him from the show. I never watched the TV show, so I didn't know anything about that other than the phrase, you're fired, and
right.
the, you know that. But if you spoke to the people who actually worked with him for a long period of time, what you found out is if they were really giving it their all and they were getting results, then he was with them and
Absolutely.
He was backing them. And of course, if they weren't doing those things, then he wasn't with them.
Right.
Because, you know, he understood, I think, that, you know, you can destroy a business pretty quickly by having people there that aren't all in. So it's interesting to watch him assemble this group. And of course, yeah, it dispels all of the rumors, right? So he's a misogynist.
Right.
Well, his chief of staff is a woman.
First woman ever.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I never pay attention to these firsts because it's usually a disaster. But this woman sounds like somebody, I've not known anything of her in the past, but
right.
it sounds like somebody who's going to be a great asset.
Right.
And doesn't bring with her the baggage of a John Kelly, you know, who I think Trump appointed Kelly because he thinks he's a general.
Yeah.
He's going to follow the commander in chief. He's going to obey orders. He's going to be on the team. He may disagree in private, but he'll be with us in public. Of course, he got anything but that.
And notice, have you seen any generals being appointed this week or last week?
None.
Not one single general.
Yeah, so he's not repeating that disaster.
No.
And I think, you know, we've even discussed this with Darren and others on this show that it turns out our general staff and flag officers may not actually be the patriots we'd like them to be.
Right.
Right? I mean, they seem to be looking forward to the next board seat. They're very political to get those positions. So in the years of to get advanced in the military, you had to be a DEI CRT
yeah.
advocate. So they were. They are whatever they had to be to get advancement in one of the most political organizations there is, the
yep.
military.
Yeah.
And so he's not making that mistake again. And he's also looked outside of D.C. to a large extent. I mean, Kristi Noem, governor, she's got great experience. She's had some mistakes that she's made on some calls where she backed off after pressure on things. There was a trans issue a couple of years ago. Maybe it was kids in sports. I can't remember which one it was.
It was kids in bathrooms, but then she turned around and signed a bill blocking trans kids from competing on the team of their opposite sex. So, you know, I think a lot of people made mistakes early on in this process. There was mm-hmm. a lot of pressure to go along with it. I remember in 2021, I was dragged in the media for taking a stance that, you know, we should just keep our female sports female. And I didn't think it was that controversial at the time, but, you know, it was. So there was a lot of pressure back then and not as much understanding as we have today.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, and look, we're not going to find someone to be appointed who hasn't had a mistake or said something wrong. Look, J.D. Vance on his positions on Trump early on.
Right.
Not good.
Right.
But over time, as he got past the rhetoric.
Marco Rubio, all of them. None of them had nice things to say about him in 2015, 2016. Ted Cruz,
right.
None of them.
Yeah, that's true. And well, and look at the things he said about Ted Cruz. I mean, it was pretty rough.
Right. Marco, too.
So it's interesting because specifically with Ted Cruz, you remember when he just sort of set aside all of these problems? I mean, he had a real reason to have grudges against Trump. It was a rough primary.
It was.
And Trump was brutal.
The most fun primary ever, though, I think.
It actually was. That's right. But he set all that aside and he said, listen, I'm going to work with this guy for the good of the country. Rand Paul, same thing.
Yeah.
And there was a whole, you could see that cadre of people whose loyalty wasn't to some specific person. And yes, their egos were hurt and they were offended, but they set that aside and they said, I'm going to be here working on policy. And Trump welcomed him in.
He taught them how to fight.
He did too.
And they changed.
Well, look at Ted Cruz before and after.
Oh my gosh.
The, yeah. The post-Trump Ted Cruz is worth a lot more to this nation than the pre-Trump Ted Cruz, who was the Harvard debate team captain.
And that's why McConnell didn't spend a single dollar on his campaign this year.
Isn't that interesting? So Mitch McConnell collects this money on behalf of the party because he gets to this position of leadership.
The Senate, right? Senate Leadership Fund, right?
You know how we're always told that you can't get rid of McCarthy because he raises a lot of money. You can't get rid of McConnell because he it turns out once you get into the position of the leadership, the donors give you money to control the legislative agenda. It's not some kind of a mystery. No. It's not like McConnell was out, you know, raising money his whole... I mean, they're not more special than some of the other folks, except when you're in that spot, the money starts to flood. And so we were told, you know, you can't change out McCarthy. He's gone and, you know, it seems like the House has been working. Well, actually hasn't working as well as we'd like because the new guy didn't really go our way.
Right.
But coming back
to McCarthy's still hanging in the wings, talking trash on Gates. Like, it is his mission to take Matt Gates down, which is absurd. And he's still out there doing it. Listen, leave and go do something else and keep your reputation intact.
Yeah, but you know, you think about this guy. He knows everybody in D.C. He knows all the donors.
Mm-hmm.
He knows all the old establishment, all the people that put a guy in place whose voting record was as radical as McCarthy's. Everybody thinks he's a moderate. Oh, he was a radical.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no one pays attention to how they vote, right?
Ever. Right.
So this guy is now coming out to go after Matt Gaetz. Of course, he's got a personal grudge. But I wonder who's standing behind him saying, hey, we want you to go do this. I wonder what exactly he gets in exchange for coming out and taking on this fight against the new administration.
Oh, no. I think actually we're down to his ego at this point because he attempted to take out Matt Gaetz in the primary this year.
Yes.
So that failed. Matt won.
Yeah, but he had money in his account to do that. He had donor money to do that. And I don't think much happens with these people if they're not getting paid by somebody.
Maybe.
So I would be shocked to find out that this was an emotional position that was the only motivation. In any event.
I mean, will we ever forget the bad lip reading of Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy over the speaker fight in the chamber? I'll never forget that.
It was hilarious. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, there were videos done where people took the interactions between Gaetz and McCarthy
which
from
were
the
aggressive.
House floor.
Yeah.
Oh, they're very aggressive.
Yeah.
And put their own speech into it. Their own, and it was hilarious.
I mean, I think it probably pretty close.
Yeah, it was, well, it might have been. So coming back to this team he's assembling, you're right. It's a team of people who are very strong.
Yeah.
Each of whom have done things in their own, but throughout this period of the last 8 years, they've all stayed focused and true to the cause. Right now, they always talk about this being loyalty to Trump, which I think it's important that he not have people who are going to be like John Kelly stabbing him every time he walks out of the room. But those
days are over.
Oh, yeah.
We learned.
That's right. But it's more important that these people be completely dedicated to the agenda, that they are emotionally and personally dedicated to the nation, the restoration of the Constitution, the mission of putting the government back in the cage that the Constitution built for it. It's critically important. And I think as you go around the list of people he's got in there, they each have a personal driving mission to do that.
You say put the country back in the box of the Constitution. When you look at the Board of Elections hearing yesterday in, was it Montgomery County?
Bucks
County, where she says, I know we haven't been following the law, or the other commissioner said, I know we haven't been following the law, or it's been different over these last 4 years. And she says straight up, we're going to violate the law. I want the courts to look at us. Yes, we know you've been violating the law for years now. We know that these things have been going on. So let's get back to the Constitution. Let's take it back to basics, figure out what went wrong, and then proceed forward. He has a mandate now.
Oh,
go
yeah.
back, fix it, get rid of this stuff.
Well, you know, thinking about what Bucks County is doing and them admitting that they're not following the law.
Yeah.
If you go back to 2017, Trump created a commission, the President's Commission on Election Integrity or something of that sort. And it was run by a guy named Kris Kobach, who then ran it for about a year, went out to all the attorneys general and all the secretaries of state and to Department of Homeland Security and said, we want all the data from the election in 2016 because we want to make sure that it was run right, find evidence of fraud, because there was a lot of fraud in 16 and everybody that was paying attention knew it. And the Republicans, the Democrats, and the Department of Homeland Security unified in their opposition to this being done. And they basically said, no, we won't give you the information. And so that commission was disbanded, and then they put out the articles that said the commission found no fraud.
Which is what we've been living through for 8 years now, right? The truth is obfuscated and hidden, and it's reported as it is not. Mm-hmm. And then the majority of people simply believe what they're told. And it's unfortunate, to be honest, but no, the states refused to give him the information. So there might have been evidence. He could have potentially found right. something, but no, the states refused to cooperate.
Well, and I remember specifically what was surprising to me at the time is that there were 9 separate counties in Indiana being investigated for election fraud. 9 in Indiana? Now, Indiana is not Pennsylvania or right. New Jersey or Connecticut. You know, Indiana is a state where things run well. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking to me that that was the case. So now we're faced with 20 hits, and it's obviously a heavily fraudulent election. And then you get into 22, we see it again. What I hope to happen now is that Donald Trump goes back to his 2017 plan and puts together another commission whose mission is to look at the security and transparency of our election processes around the country to make certain that those are secure, that we're getting the results that the people are actually voting for, that this fraud, this industrial scale fraud that you know has been shown around the country, that goes away,
right.
that our voter rolls are cleaned up. One of the first things they could do is put in a nationwide requirement that for all federal elections, you must have a photo ID. That would be a simple thing.
Yep.
You must vote on a paper ballot.
It's coming.
Right? Get rid of these touch screens that everybody's constantly having problems with because they touch a candidate and the other candidate's chosen.
Yep.
We've seen this in different states. So to have that requirement for federal would make it a requirement for all the local and state because they can't run two systems.
Right.
And then
it would just be, I think the way that they would get around it, especially here with our county election boards, would be every other year.
Well, they might. But, yeah. You know, it'd be very hard to keep switching processes.
Yeah.
But then have a requirement for an honestly robust, true audit, not this LNA testing nonsense and this 2% thing. An actual audit of the elections like you would do with every other process that we run that is critical.
Right.
You know, and think about a bank that processes checks. A check cashing center runs millions and millions and millions of transactions and never has an error. And yet we can't run an election system. We can't do it in a timely fashion. It takes weeks to figure it out. And another thing that they should do is require that anyone voting from overseas identify themselves. Because right now, and I know people won't believe this, but right now, you can actually register to vote from overseas and not even prove that you're a citizen,
yes.
not prove that you live in or intend to ever live in the state you're voting in.
Yep.
It is incredible, this whole. It's a system called UOCAVA. It's the Uniform Overseas Voting System. And it is actually the case that you don't have to prove who you are, that you're eligible to vote. You can still register and vote and cast a ballot.
You can use an address that you've never lived at ever in your life to register to vote as right. UOCAVA.
Yes. And then, you know, if those ballots are even challenged, they'll stand up because yep. that's what the law says.
Yep.
This is a great opportunity for the Trump administration to come in now with control of Department of Homeland Security, with control, hopefully, of the FBI. You know, hopefully they'll have control of the entire Department of Justice this time. And if so, then they can say, look, we don't want you to create a situation where we get to cheat. We just want to eliminate the fraud. We want to eliminate the cheating. We want to make sure that our voter rolls, our election processes, and our systems that we're using, the equipment or whatever we're going to do it with, that those are secure, that they are transparent. We can see that they're actually working well and that we no longer have to be standing around looking at election stuff, you know, for fraud.
And I really appreciate these Board of Elections here in the state of Pennsylvania shining a super big light on them to say, pick me, start here. Pennsylvania is the state we're going to investigate first. So I do think that when Trump takes office in January, we're going to see a shift in focus for this and a prioritization of fixing these elections prior to 2026.
Well, I think he's got to do it because yeah. if he doesn't do it, there's no hope in the midterms.
No.
There's no hope.
Although, let me tell you that I did suffer through, and I mean that quite literally, suffer through an indivisible leadership training video this week. They did
oh, really?
A live call. Yes, Elizabeth Warren was on. It was really amazing.
Now, what is Indivisible?
Indivisible was created, I mean, maybe right before Trump or right after Trump won in 2016. They're a leftist organization, a progressive organization. And they're brutal. They're really, you know, aggressive, and they go after people for personal destruction. It is what it is. That's what they do. Well, I watched to see if there was any self-awareness, maybe, or an understanding of what happened on November 5th, and to see what their plans moving forward is or are. Mm-hmm. And let me assure you, they have no idea what happened on November 5th. They don't think they're at fault for it. Elon Musk and Starlink stole it potentially, and they're tripling down. Mm-hmm. Identity politics, LGBTQ, women, you know, won't be able to get divorced from their husbands without their husband's permission.
Right.
You know, The Handmaid's Tale is on its way, apparently. And I'm feeling actually really good. If these organizations continue to fail to understand why so many people picked the Republican Party this year, then 2026, we're just going to finish it off.
Well, assuming the elections are free and fair, that they're secure and transparent.
Yes.
So this is maybe the biggest thing that Trump can do right now to help be successful in midterms is get the administration and get now this Republican Senate and House to pass legislation that requires some really simple elements in this: paper ballot, photo ID, proof of citizenship, and audit. There are some things that could be done there.
Yeah.
You know, it is interesting now when we look at these people that he has selected.
Just meek men and women, quiet people.
I mean, and it's interesting that it's a combination of Democrats and Republicans. You know, you're talking about...
Well, Tulsi changed her party, but yes. But
nevertheless, you know, you're looking at this Indivisible.
Yeah.
And they're down to about this 35% of the nation, as far as we can tell from different numbers, that are just absolutely dedicated to their movement. They look at this woke thing as a religion. They can't move them.
It is a religion to them.
It is.
It really is.
Yes.
They just transferred any kind of religious or faith-based beliefs over to, you know, there is no sex and you can be any gender you want. And
well, and if you want to prove that, go to a couple of school board meetings that have been taken over by the radicals and listen to them talk about what they think is important in education.
That's quickly coming to an end here in
shocking.
Pennsylvania, though.
So they've created this religious movement, woke, and they've created this army of people that are obsessed with hatred. And, you know, they're the ones that have the no hate here signs, which now everyone realizes.
Hate doesn't live here in my home. Okay.
And everybody now realizes that those signs are the first indication that this is a really hateful group, right?
Performative. It was so performative.
Absolutely. Intolerance on display.
And those signs are coming down so fast.
Well, I haven't noticed that. I'll have to look for the ones that are.
Oh, well, the Harris signs came down the next day.
The Harris
People
signs
were
came
out,
down pretty
like,
quick.
Ripping them out of their yards. My Trump sign's still up. I'm keeping it up till January.
Look at how excited they got about Harris, a woman that nobody supported until the moment she was anointed, not elected, anointed to be the nominee.
Yeah.
And then suddenly these folks are Harris fans as if she's one of the Beatles. I mean, they were absolutely emotionally connected to her and excited, and they're running around Tim Walz. They got excited about Tim Walz. These are people that are so deeply indoctrinated they can't be reached. So then you look at some of the other Democrats, and you can tell, obviously, Donald Trump didn't win this election with Republican votes.
No.
He had to have Republicans, independents, and Democrats to win this, and he got them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about the unions. We've talked about Kensington. We've talked about all these different, the Hispanics. We've talked about all these demographics.
The feminists who care about female sports.
Oh, right. That changed some people.
Who knew?
So we talked about each of these core groups that the Democrat Party truly depends on, counts on, and thinks they own. And now they've begun to move away. And then you look at the makeup of this team he's put together, and you've got a Tulsi Gabbard in there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got...
As DNI. So let's be very, very... Or NSA.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to walk in that building the first day and sit down with her leadership team and say, so, who put me on the do not fly list? Which one was it? So I think that putting someone who was particularly and specifically targeted by the Biden administration in charge, who understands what it's like to be targeted in that way, mm-hmm. to fix it is super awesome. I'm very excited about Tulsi.
Yeah, me too. I think she's going to be a great addition to this. And I believe that part of the reason that he won was pulling this coalition together, which included those folks. Now, we've got a caller on. Mitch, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. You got some observations on the team?
Well, yeah, I was listening just now. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation when Tulsi walks in.
Same.
I've also been watching Elon Musk already has the account set up for Department of Government Efficiency. Those tweets are amazing so far. I'm loving it.
Oh, yeah. This another critical element of this. You can't underestimate the importance of X. It really gave people a way to communicate and get the message out, and it was effective. The idea of having a team focused exclusively on government efficiency has got to be absolutely terrifying to everybody at the Pentagon and everyone else in
absolutely.
D.C. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I've held the view for a long time. I used to say we could take $250 billion out of our defense budget without losing capability. I now think it's $500 billion.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
we could take $500 billion out of our trillion-dollar defense budget and lose no capability. You know, and one of the examples is the $94,000 bag of bolts that you could buy at Home Depot for $200.
Yeah.
You know, with the inspections and the extra processing that has to happen for things that go into critical applications like aerospace and military, let's say instead of $200 at Home Depot, it would be $400.
Right.
I wouldn't say a word. I'd be quite comfortable with that. $94,000? Now, that's just stealing. So, Mitch, what are you thinking of Matt Gaetz here? I mean, this is the most controversial one. Everybody's screaming. The entirety of D.C. is in a frenzy because they feel like they're losing control of their weapon, which is the Department of Justice. What do you think?
Yeah, I keep seeing the clip going around of the one interview he did a while ago. Is it accurate to say you think the people who show up at these abortion rallies are fat and ugly? Yes.
Yes.
What do you say to the people who are offended? Be offended.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, whether you like the fact that
he does not apologize for that kind of thing. And I hope he gets in. I hope if they vote against him, I hope he gets recess appointed.
Well, you know, I don't. So clearly there's going to be a fight. You've already seen some of the old establishment Republicans getting ready to at least ask tough questions. But if they really go after and try to stop these appointments, I think it again comes back to the people. If we sit idly by and let it go, then we're in trouble.
Thune already came out, our new Senate leader, and said, if there is an issue through these Senate confirmation hearings, we will do recess appointments. So he is already committed to getting these appointees in position either by confirmation hearing or by recess appointments. So I think he's definitely gotten the message this week that this is a new game that we're playing and there's a new sheriff in town. And none of the people who voted for him are going to sit quietly by and watch them do what they did in 2017 through 2020 ever again.
Well, and see, that's what I think is the key.
Yeah.
So what Thune says, I put little stock in because we've watched this guy's voting record pretending to be a conservative,
yeah.
pretending to be a Republican. He's just an opportunist,
mm-hmm.
right? He's a failure as a conservative or a patriot or a constitutionalist. He is an opportunist. So if he says in order to be the Senate majority lead and in order to hold on to this power and be able to collect all these donations and wield influence over the legislative agenda, I have to let these go through. And he's held to that, it'll work.
Yeah, he said it after he won the chat, like he won the seat. So, I mean, I tend to believe people once they're there, not so necessarily before they get there.
I'm sure he's going to do what he just said.
Yeah.
Sure. But there's always a way in D.C. that we are told that all these things are going to happen. People like Thune come out and promise it. And then somehow we're once again disappointed. It's over and over.
I like what you said about us not sitting idly by and doing something. I'm already thinking about the next governor election in 2026. Scott Pressler's app is still around. We can get started today, making phone calls, knocking on doors, registering people to vote. That's something we can do, and I want to look ahead towards that.
Yeah, there will be a lot of there's a lot of action to keep taking. But the point you're making, the point you're building on that I made is, if the American people go back to sleep and say, okay, we've hired Superman, he's brought his little squad of heroes in, now I can just go and forget about what's going on in the world, that's simply not going to work. Because when you've got the old establishment Republicans, you've got the hardcore Democrat wokesters, you've got the entirety of the corrupt DC establishment, you've got, you know, all of these deep agencies, they're all aligned against the American agenda. They are a serious force, and the only thing with the authority and power to overcome that is the American people. So, Mitch, thanks for joining us here on the Conservative Voice, and we appreciate your comments.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
So, the this stuff is moving so quickly, And we like to tap into folks who've actually been there and know what's going on, right? And so we had on the show once before Ezra Cohen, the former acting Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. Long titles in government.
Yes.
And we are fortunate to have
and
Ezra.
And he's had a few of them, right?
That's right. He's
really
moved
cool
around
ones.
A bit.
Yeah.
That's right. And so we'd like to welcome Ezra back to the Conservative Voice. Ezra, welcome.
Great. Thanks to be with you again.
So, you know, the folks you know in D.C., how terrified are they?
Well, you know, I'm actually calling in from D.C. right now. I'll tell you, I wouldn't say they're terrified yet. I think they're just more completely disoriented now. They don't know what's going on. They weren't expecting these picks. Look, especially when you look at the Department of Defense, they're used to being able to get in, retired defense executives in there. And so they weren't expecting that Donald Trump would throw this type of curveball. Of course, they want those types of defense executives because they can control them. And in Pete Hegseth, they have somebody they can't control. So I think it's more of just a state of confusion.
The hit piece that Politico ran against him that they thought would be so effective at hurting his reputation by saying the defense contractors didn't know who he was. And I'm thinking, that's wonderful. That is such a wonderful endorsement. You didn't have to convince me. I am already on board.
Right. They continue to make those mistakes where they keep telling us things they think are important to the people.
Right.
But they're not. They're only important to people inside the Beltway. And you know, I think everyone is concerned about the relationship between the contractors and the people making decisions inside the Pentagon and the administration.
Look, they're living in a fishbowl here, right? I mean, you got to keep in mind. So you've got a group of people here that can, you know, by the way, it's 99% voting Democrat, and they control the whole country from here. They try to. But they're all talking to each other, you know, they're in this sort of like fishbowl echo chamber type thing. And, they've lost perspective. I think that's what's like really the most incredible thing about Donald Trump. And in the second term is that he's bringing incredible outside perspective and he's combining that with the lessons learned of the first term. So you're going to see the outside perspective combined with this ability to really get stuff done. And he knows the ropes now, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I, around mid 2019, I began to express my absolute astonishment at how much he had gotten done in spite of the Russia collusion hoax and all the rest of the hoaxes and the attacks and the resistance and the refusals to participate by the federal agencies that were supposed to report to him and people like Paul Ryan. And now to your point, Ezra, he's coming into this with having done a practice run, right? I mean, he brought China from a trade standpoint to its knees within 36 months. That was impressive. Well, now he's already done that once. He's coming at this now with so much experience and with a team that has a unique set of experiences. I mean, I'm very excited. I think this is a great lineup.
Yeah, and I look, all these people are taking shots at Pete Hegseth. I mean, I talked a little bit about this on Twitter earlier this week, but let's objectively go back and look at the past few secretaries of defense.
Yeah.
If you didn't have defense contractor or lobbyist on your resume, the DC establishment says not qualified. But if you have that you were a soldier, a war fighter, you care for veterans and the troops, you're not qualified. If you're a DC right. defense contractor and lobbyist, you're qualified. It's just the whole thing is completely out of whack. I think one of the great things about Pete Hegseth, you know, having spent a lot of time myself at the Pentagon, he doesn't have any, you know, deep seated loyalty or connection. So he's going to be able to come in and look at this very objectively. And I think come to the conclusion that, you know, we're not winning. The current formulation that we have at the Department of Defense isn't winning. Meanwhile, we've got a huge potential conflict on the horizon with China. So we kind of need to turn that around pretty quickly.
He talked about that a bit on his interview with the Sean Ryan show, which actually just released, I think it was last week. It was right before Donald Trump named him as head of DOD. And he talks about the war games that we've done in regards to a China conflict, and that we have lost every, we have a perfect record. We have lost every single one of them. So, you know, I think people are painting him as a Fox News host and completely ignoring his history and his background. I think he's a fantastic choice. Your spaces that you did, the weeks are blending together. I don't know if it was early this week or end of last week with different national security specialists was a really, really eye-opening view into how you guys are looking at everything that's going on right now. And if anyone wants to watch it, I'm pretty sure it's still on your page so they can go look it up. But it's really interesting to get your guys' perspective because you went through so much in that first term and to see what's going on now. Any thoughts on Tulsi?
Well, I don't know Tulsi Gabbard, but what I can tell you is, you know, the little that I've seen online, you know, just kind of reading the media is that she seems like she's got quite a good dose of skepticism. And I think that skepticism is actually an extremely important thing. Remember, one of the jobs of the Office of the Defense of National ODNI is specifically to look across the intelligence community, see all of the different intelligence assessments, and actually try to question them and challenge the kind of establishment line of analysis so that you get the best possible information and most insightful information and most accurate information for the president. So having somebody that's skeptical and it again has outside thinking in that job is actually extremely important.
Yeah, and she doesn't have the tight ties to anybody there. I mean, I guess this is the same point. She's not, you know, people are saying, well, she hasn't been in the intelligence community. She hasn't served in the ODNI in some role. She hasn't even been on the intelligence committee within Congress. And I'm looking at all those and saying, well, that's great. I think that's really good, to your point. They continue to criticize these folks in ways that make me think they're better candidates.
Yeah.
And
well, also, one other thing, sorry to interrupt, but the issue is it actually shows that they misunderstand the role. Because yes, there is what we call a budgetary aspect to the DNI job.
Mm-hmm.
But find me a DNI that actually is sitting down there and working the budget spreadsheet. The DNI doesn't do that. You have a staff of people that do that,
right?
And bring this to you, and you have other layers of political appointees that do that type of analysis, and they bring it to you as the DNI. And by the way, so this whole thing that she doesn't know the IC. She's not going to be the one working the spreadsheet. They don't understand how the jobs actually work. But she's got the skepticism to ask them, hey, why are we spending so much money on this thing and we have very little return, right? Somebody like you, kind of where I think you're going, is somebody that is super indebted in the system and a creature of the system. They're probably not going to want to ask that because they don't want to pull $100 million from their friend.
Right. That's exactly right. Those relationships are basically corrupting their view. Right, it changes the lens with which they look at things. It's in my mind not necessarily a good thing to have somebody that came up through, for example, DOJ be the attorney general, because okay, they've got some experience that's valuable, yeah, but that organization hasn't been functioning well in a very, very long time. So, do I want somebody that came up in an organization that is broken, or do I want somebody new coming into that organization with fresh eyes who's going to look at it and say, how do we make this better? How do we get back to our mission? How do we get back to the restraints put upon us by the Constitution and now begin to honor those restraints?
Yeah, even more important than that, because she's an outsider, she's not going to be bogged down with a bunch of, you know, lobbyist industry dinners, you know, in D.C. They're probably not even going to want to have her come to the dinner, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah,
I mean, she's not going to be influenced in the wrong direction. You know, a lot of these people, you look at the last 4 years, all of these Biden, Kamala people, they all came out of these, you know, think tanks, Brookings Institution, CSIS. I could go down the whole list.
Yep.
I mean, and they have basically advanced these crazy policies. I mean, some people call them globalists, but basically America last. And
right.
So to have somebody that's not a DC insider, that's not going to be bogged down in these think tank dinner places, is actually a great thing.
It
means that we're not going to be focused. We're going to be focused on what matters. Sorry.
That's right. Your insights are great and appreciated. And one of the things that, of course, people are going after her for is this trip she made when she was in Congress, and we were being told that the nation's highest purpose, most important thing to do was to destroy Syria because Bashar al-Assad is, you know, crazy. He's got a civil war going and he's killing his own citizens. And if you looked at the numbers, in some cases, they were a little bit like the numbers we had in our civil war back, a couple of years back there. So civil war is a nasty thing. What we never got in any of the media or any of the, you know, punditry was a real assessment of who our allies were. They were just described as freedom fighters in every publication. And we never really got a clear assessment of what it was that made Bashar al-Assad so horrible. And so we were being told we have to go to war and destroy this country. We have to take on Russia and Iran. And this is our most important strategic move. Well, she went over and talked to him. And that set Washington ablaze. The fact that a congresswoman would step outside of their control and go actually speak to somebody who we were being told we should destroy set them off. So when you talk about her having an appropriate level of skepticism, I thought it was great that she went over and had those discussions. I don't think she was trying to shift policy or somehow undermine. This wasn't like when John Kerry goes to Iran.
Or right? Barack Obama visits Great Britain this week.
Yeah, I don't think it was one of those. So is my view of that in any way right? Or did I just miss the boat?
Yeah. So first of all, I haven't seen exactly the specific comments that she made or the trip. But what I can tell you is, I think, look, obviously, I've already said skepticism is great. I mean, look, Bashar al-Assad is a horrible human being. He's a horrible murderer. President Trump actually took action against him twice after he used chemical weapons on his own people. That was the president's decision after he saw what they did to children with chemical weapons.
Yeah.
But remember, Barack Obama didn't have the courage to do that after he drew the red line in the sand. So, but what I will tell you is, when you look at Syria, it is when I was still in the government, they would show you a map of Syria. The analysts would come in, they'd show you a map of Syria, and they'd say, these are all the different groups that are operating there. And, you know, each one would be a different color. And there were like 30 colors on the map.
Right.
And I said to myself, wow, so we have no understanding of who's on what side. There's no way to keep track of this. And basically, it's not just Assad that's horrible there. You have a lot of bad people.
Right.
And so you got to be super careful. We were interfering and doing things there. It's very hard to keep track of who's good and who's bad, and alliances are shifting every week. It's an extremely complex situation. And so to have somebody that's going to be skeptical and say, you know what, what we knew yesterday isn't going to be true tomorrow, and so we have to be very, very careful, I think is a great thing.
Yeah, that was my take. There were bad folks on all sides. And if we got in the business of removing every bad guy, well, that's a mission that would never end. It'd cover the globe.
Well, and it was Obama's reset with Russia. Yet here we are watching people call her a Russian asset. So, you know, it's like they expect us to memory hole these things and completely forget what we witnessed and saw unfold. And then, you know, just go along with the new narrative this week. So it's kind of nuts in that regard.
It's so tiring. It's Russia's. It's honestly tiring. First of all, people roll their eyes now, right? Everybody's Russia. Let me tell you,
no one rolled their eyes at our county offices on election night when they believed the bomb threat that was emailed in, I think, came from Russia. And they reported that the bomb threat that came into our county election office came from Russia in a press conference that night. And I heard that and immediately rolled my eyes like, oh gosh, are we really doing this again already? November 5th?
Nobody in government rolled their eyes.
No.
Everybody that heard that thought it was a joke,
They've cried wolf. They cried wolf so many times. And actually, this is the problem. I mean, Russia is a threat, a legitimate threat to the United States. It's a legitimate adversary. But we have all these people that weaponized it into a political thing. And they cried wolf. And so now a lot of the country doesn't believe it. This is the danger of having, a hyper-politicized intelligence community like we've seen under Obama and Biden, because they lose credibility. So they can't actually do the good things that we need them to do.
Right.
I'll tell you. I mean, one of the just absolutely, crazy things is that they also make these accusations with no proof. So show me why I see all these people on MSNBC throwing around this Russian stuff about her. Let's actually look at the proof. By the way, it was Barack Obama with Medvedev that told him, after the election, I'll be going to be able to do more, all of these things to collude with Russia. And Medvedev says back to him, I will transmit this message to Vladimir. Which is, by the way, I come from an intelligence operations background. That sounds like something out of the KGB handbook, like they're running Obama, of course, I don't think that that's actually the case. But my point is, you can go the other way, too. And so I think we just need to kind of cool it with all of these just crazy foreign interference accusations and actually just get back to the facts.
That's going to be tough for our media, though. They don't seem to have learned.
No.
Like they don't seem to understand what happened last week. I mean, I must tell you, I'm enjoying The View and Morning Joe again. I couldn't watch him for a while, but it's been a real treat and delight the last week. they lost ratings, but they got some conservatives back who just want to watch and laugh. It's a real weird place we're in where they don't seem to understand what happened and are blaming all kinds of different things like sexism, Handmaid's Tale, whatever, shaving their heads and wearing blue bracelets. There's all kinds of activism happening right now. But instead of recognizing what happened, they're just tripling down on it.
It's this has been 4 years of distraction.
Yep.
I mean, when I say distraction, look at our Pentagon. Look at our military. It has been so distracted with these things that have absolutely nothing to do with the Pentagon's job, which is defeating the enemy. And I think actually I saw Hegseth said this on that podcast where he said, look, this is not helping combat lethality. And that's exactly it, right?
Right.
Like the number one thing we need to do is refocus our government on what it's supposed to be doing, not all these other ridiculous side projects. Which actually make the country very weak, and it invites our enemies to attack us. I think this is one of the key things people don't understand about why Donald Trump is going to restore strength to the United States. It's not just about, talking tough, acting tough, and, increasing defense production. It's also about cutting out the distraction.
Absolutely. It seems, from outside the Beltway that everything in D.C. has lost its way and they're all focused on everything except what they should be focused on. And I guess that comes from years of absolutely no oversight. Congressional oversight is no longer really a thing. It's just a show that they do for Fox. It's unlimited amounts of money. When you can go from $400 to $500, $200 billion deficits up to $2 trillion deficits, and no one says a word. When you can accumulate 36, 37, it's going to be $40 trillion of debt, and there's no outcry. You could spend it any way you want, and the people have no idea. It's all decided by these connected. At that point, I think you no longer care what anybody else thinks. It's just, they have their own agenda, and they're running it.
It's very sad to see what's happened with congressional oversight, because I think, as a former political appointee, I actually view the idea of congressional oversight as positive, because you only have so many people to really kind of look at and control the bureaucracy.
Yep.
To have this kind of independent congressional oversight, I see as a positive thing. And we should want to actually work with Congress to enable that. Unfortunately, what's happened is you've had the bureaucratic level, the permanent security state, the permanent bureaucracy, and basically co-opted Congress. And they have their own lobbying mechanisms, and they wine and dine these congressmen. It's allowed because it's government to government, so it's not like private sector. You got to be careful. But they have almost there's no rules. There's no rules on the permanent bureaucracy, permanent security state lobbying of the people that are supposed to be overseeing them. They take them on trips. They give them free meals. They do all sorts of stuff that the private sector can't do. And what does that mean? That means that they are literally degrading the quality and the aggressiveness of the oversight. And that is a huge, huge problem. That's why we have crazy things where, the congressman, you've got some general that's whining and dining them. And next thing you know, it's like they've got a blank check and they're just wasting money.
Yep.
And so, I don't know what we can do, to be honest, to fix that. I think it's going to be tough because a lot of that is really on Congress's side. Congress has to say, look, we need to have an arm's length relationship from the people that we're supposed to be overseeing. But so it's going to be hard on the executive branch. I think one of the things that we might look at is, you know, all of these independent bureaucratic lobbying elements that really don't seem to be controlled by anybody. I think that's something we might look at, but it's a tough situation.
Let me ask you this question. We've got about 4 minutes left. How much in the 2016 election, you know, that first term, there was a massive amount of resistance inside D.C. And of course, they quickly captured some of the appointees, like the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who simply was neutered the minute he walked in the door.
Yeah.
How much fight is in these people? How much are they going to resist the Trump administration, the American agenda, and putting some of the constraints we've just talked about on them?
Well, look, they're planning the ambushes now, okay? And, you know, I'm seeing a lot of really great ideas, you know, people like Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, who are, you know, coming up with these really great transformative ideas. What I would just encourage them to think about is every single idea you come up with needs to be, have part of that plan needs to be how to withstand the bureaucratic assault that it's going to face on day one. There is going to be no easy battle. Okay. They're going to make everything a hard, brutal battle. And so you need to think how you're going to deal with that. They are laying 100% laying policy traps now. You know, we're seeing reports that they're already starting to burrow in. And one thing, actually, I would really like to highlight for your listeners, and I'm probably going to talk about this on Twitter, but is there should be no confirmations between now and January 20th. There should be no new confirmations of senior military officers, because what is happening right now is they are trying to appoint a whole slate of generals and admirals into these senior positions to take away President Trump's decision space, so that they will already be in there and confirmed before January 20th. And this is a huge problem. I'm hearing now they're actually rushing to get generals and admirals appointed so that Trump doesn't have a say. And this is a big problem.
And now that said, with all these, already the existing infrastructure that's so bad in that military, you know, these generals and flag officers that have to be probably removed to make this an effective fighting force again, can he simply remove those folks even though they're installed and confirmed?
Yeah, sure, he can, but that's just like one more fight.
Yeah.
Right? So this is where we need the Senate to literally, we need the senators. I know that they don't have a majority during this current session. It's going to change very soon, thankfully. But we need them to put the brakes on this, just like Tomer Tuberville did earlier a couple of years ago. Yeah. We got to put the brakes on this right now, because this is I will tell you, there are a lot of elements that are still held over there from Mark Milley. And this is absolutely a kind of, you know, Milley-driven initiative. And so we need to raise attention on this, and we have to get people to put the brakes on this.
Well, let's hope they do.
I appreciate you continuing to speak out. I'm sorry you're getting blocked by people on Twitter, although that was pretty hilarious the other day to see you share that.
Now, who blocked you on Twitter?
Oh, you know, just a guy who was a DC, a mid-level DC defense lobbyist. I'll just say that. But no, I'm joking. It was Mark Esper, but that actually is what he did before. That is what he did beforehand. Look, he's a very, he wasn't a good choice for President Trump.
No.
I think Hegseth is going to be 100 times better than he was. You know, I'll just say, look, my issue, the thing with Mark Esper is the guy literally couldn't have cared less about 100,000 people dying of fentanyl overdoses.
Yeah. No.
And he did everything he could to try to stop the Department of Defense from protecting hundreds of thousands of Americans from drugs coming across the border. And to me, that's just inexcusable.
I couldn't agree more. And it's not just him. It's the entire administration that has presided over 400,000 approximately deaths from fentanyl and xylazine and heroin, and have taken no action. And it's not consistent with past periods. This is a significantly larger number of people dying. And they're not only not trying to stop it, but they facilitate the importation of these chemical weapons across the border and the distribution of those weapons from coast to coast and river to lake. And I say chemical weapons because it's clear that fentanyl brought in by a cartel is killing hundreds of thousands. It's not anything but a chemical weapon.
We're not making it here.
No.
Well, it's China. It's China. That's what people still don't understand. This is a Chinese-directed chemical weapons campaign to kill Americans. All of the chemicals, the precursors, everything that's coming out of China, the labs that are in Mexico are being run by China. This is not. We understand this very well. But, I mean, I can tell you right now, actually, the Biden DEA and Biden Justice Department has been shutting down counter-fentanyl programs along the border. Why? What is the plausible explanation for that?
That's right. You know, now, Ezra, we're running out of time here. How can we follow you on X?
It's Ezra A. Cohen. That's it. It's at,
that's
at
it?
Ezra A. Cohen. That's my only account. I have a lot of people impersonating me. So just go to that account and,
I found some of the impersonators and I found yours. And so thanks so much. Hey, thanks for joining us again on the Conservative Voice. Gonna really hope that we get to talk to you once again as this continues to unfold. It's an exciting time to be alive.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.